All right, well, it's time for our motivational talk. So I'll see if I can stay seated, but if not, I will stand. All right, so today's topic is motivation. So when Connie had asked me, you know, Kara, I need a topic. I was like, oh, I sat and I meditated, and it took me a while to come up with one. And I was like, oh, what's going on? What should I talk about, right? Well, it turns out it was motivating, just like we shared earlier, that, you know, I needed motivation. I needed that pull to keep going. So as we listen to the words today, I just want you to continue to contemplate what motivates you. I mean, really, what motivates you? What makes your heart sing, gets you to move without thinking? What are you naturally drawn toward? What is your inner pull that has such a strong momentum that you have to do it? Seriously, what motivates you? So as you contemplate that, I'm going to tell you what motivates me. Acceptance motivates me. Recently, I had one of those juicy aha moments that we all love, where everything in mind, body, and soul just lined up as one. And don't you just love those moments of epiphany? Doesn't it make your heart sing with joy? And aren't they the absolutely best things in life? They really are. I mean, really. Anyway, as I was saying, the moment came when I was contemplating diet and exercise. You see, I've been a lifelong dieter, and if I wasn't dieting, I was exercising. And if I wasn't exercising, I wasn't dieting. And I have this classic love-hate relationship with my body. When it did look the way I wanted it, then of course I loved it. When it got ill or broken or overweight, I hated it. Catching the theme here? So recently, I had a routine physical at the family doctor, and my urine came back with high potassium. Well, to some people, that's no big deal. But for me, what happened, like everybody else, is that, you know, I did the Google search the minute I got home and diagnosed myself. Forget what the doctor says, you know, with the medical degree and her experience. I'll figure this out on my own, you know, what works for me. Well, what I figured out was what high potassium meant was, oh my God, my dad had died of high potassium and his kidneys gave out and he had a heart attack as a result. So it wasn't just this diagnosis of, you know, high potassium. This was an emotional, traumatic trigger, you know. So I was like, oh my gosh. And, you know, it took me days of shock and psychoanalyzing every reason this could have happened. And more importantly, not wanting to be honest with myself that I was to blame, and had a few fear-filled crying episodes during a full moon, until my rational side took hold. And I heard my inner voice saying, what about this can you control, and what are you going to do about it? Well, of course, the fact is that there's absolutely no way I'm going to go out like my dad did, and this was the first motivating factor I figured out. But then I realized maybe I could start eating healthier and move a little more. Really? My mind chatter started to argue. You are the laziest person on the face of the planet, and you know darn well this is all talk. There is no way you're going to make time to eat better and exercise. You have thousands of reasons not to. And then my inner voice replied, you have control over your own happiness and what will make you feel better. So if you would, just try this. So off I went on this mission to get the potassium levels in normal range. And as I began drinking lots of water, eating salads every day for lunch, and walking more, stumbled upon this new exercise I adore now called Aqua Zumba. This is essentially playing in the deep end of the pool in the water with flotation toys. You have a flotation toy that goes around your waist, and then you have these little weights that you play with in the pool. And guess what? My body's responding. I'm sleeping better and I'm feeling more relaxed and healthier. And after 2 weeks, I went back to the doctor to have my levels checked, and I'm back in normal range. Well, good for me. But that's not where the story ends, you see. The best part of this story was the aha moment. The aha moment happened when I went for a walk in the woods after Aqua Zumba. Alone by myself in solitude, I hear my inner voice say, it's all about acceptance, Carrie. If you accept yourself where you are right here, right now, that is when and where self-love and happiness can grow from. The moment you accept the wholeness of who you are, life will keep getting better and better in this moment, in this moment, and in this moment. And there it was, the birth of my personal momentum, my personal motivation. What a relief it was to be what a relief it was for to be in search of being healthy, thinner and flexible was now my physical experience. Who knew it could be that easy? We all spend so much time studying and searching for that which is already within ourselves. But what we really want is to love ourselves fully, 100% first, and then go play in the world and follow our intuition completely. So how do we get motivated to love ourselves? Well, here are some quotes to get your juices flowing. Once something is a passion, the motivation is there. Do not judge me by my successes. Judge me by how many times I fell down and got back up again. The measure of who we are is what we do with what we have. If you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. You've always had the power. You just had to learn it for yourself. Spread love wherever you go. Let no one ever come to you without leaving happier. The only person you are destined to become is the person you decide to be. Desire is the key to motivation, but it's the determination and commitment to unrelenting pursuit of your goal, a commitment to excellence that will enable you to attain the success you seek. I always use the negativity as more motivation to work harder and become even stronger. Money was never a big motivation for me, except as a way to keep score. The real excitement is in playing the game. Wanting something is not enough. You must hunger for it. Your motivation must be absolutely compelling in order to overcome the obstacles that when invariably will come your way. People often say that motivation does not last. Well, either does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. Perhaps there comes a time when acceptance is understood and we move into a whole new layer of self-responsibility. If I monitor my thoughts, my actions, my energy, consciously making an effort to come from a place of a higher vibration, that God vibration, if you like, then I am not a victim of emotional energy and consequences. If I do what I can to create a God reality within my own life, then I am contributing to the possibility of change here in this earth reality. The perfect body and the perfect mind could never provide the kind of perfection you long for. What you long for is the perfect present embrace of this body and mind in all its glorious imperfection, in its heartbreak, in its seeking, in its struggle, its exhaustion, and its absence of answers. The perfect love that you know that you are. Your heart is a vast room, friends, and it can hold even more profound heartbreak without breaking. It can carry the most intense grief without closing. Your true strength lies in your openness to all life energies. Your true courage lies in your refusal to turn away from what is here. Your true nature shines brilliantly always. So how does that feel? You should feel amazing. You should know by now that you are stronger, smarter, and more intelligent than the voice of doubt in your head. Don't you remember what it feels like to be in the zone? We've all heard this term, the zone. It's what the athletes call it when they're interviewed after a great game. Inevitably, they thank Jesus or a force outside themselves, and then they say some version of, I was in the zone today. I thank Jesus, the moon, the stars, and my teammates, and everybody but me. In case I ever fall out of the zone, I'm on record to have having been in the zone and yada, yada, yada. And it just is this beautiful little circle. So, you know, in that moment, you decide that I'm going to do this or that, or I'm not going to do this or that. That empowerment that comes from deep within your knowing that I am this, you just know that you know how it is to feel so good. So here are some other things to contemplate on how to make motivation a daily habit. Knowing and acknowledging how you really feel can make a big difference. You know, we've all been there. We've had a task to do that we really don't want to do, and having our heavy sighs and outbursts about it. And have you ever stopped to ask yourself, why are you reacting the way you're reacting? Sometimes a simple pause is all you need to shift your attitude and get it on the right track again. Pay attention to your intuition because it matters. How often have we faced a decision with our head saying one thing and our heart saying another? Then there's the other factor, our gut, our intuition. Learning how to follow our personal intuition is a crucial skill we all have. All the great leaders, when asked about decision making, always come up with some variation of, I do what my gut said, or the more polite version is, follow your heart. Think about that for a moment. When have you followed your intuition, and what happened? Boundaries. Boundaries are important. It took me all these years to find the goodness in this one. I thought boundaries meant walking away and never talking to them. I thought the world was black and white. You know, all that mentality. I recently discovered that there is more to the story. It actually feels great to say no when you mean no and yes when you mean yes. I did so many things out of obligation and because I thought I had to until I realized the power of yes and no. Honor your right to pause so you can feel connected with yourself and others. I know who I am. And I know it is hard to tell you to pause in this busy, frenzied, technological world. So how can you pause moment to moment in your daily interactions? Well, you know what to do. You've all done it one way or another. You just pause and you regroup. And you look at what you're doing, and you pay attention. That reminds me of a trip I took recently, and I was in the airport, and I sat next to this elderly man who was a Vietnam veteran, and he was going to visit his platoon that was still surviving, and they were having a reunion. And it just so happened we got to chatting and everything, and I love talking to geriatric people. I want to know what still fuels them. And he was so passionate about going to see his friends and everything. And I said, you know, just matter-of-factly, I said, what's the secret to staying alive? And he said, to pay attention to what you're doing. Wow. That simple, that powerful. So we can all pause, right? So two more here, and it's okay to change course and trust your sense of what is right for you. There was a beautiful quote that said, if you keep doing the same routine for 75 years or more, that's not living. Life is meant to be lived with fervor and passion. Decide what makes you happy and then do it. Decide what makes you happy, then do it. We have a little example running around the room right now. Decide what makes you happy, then do it. Then decide again. And oh, by the way, decide again. Decide again and do what makes you happy. Take time to become aware that you are really wanting what you are really wanting so you can give yourself what you need. We all endure obstacles in life. Heck, I would love to have my beachfront resort and not have to work for a living, but I'm not there yet. What could I do to get that plan in action? Look at my finances, develop a step-by-step savings plan, play the lottery, or find me a sugar daddy. The possibilities are endless. But the point is to become self-responsible and accountable for my actions. We all have these moments where it feels absolutely fantastic when a plan finally comes together. So for those of you who know me intimately, I've been known to channel. So as I was preparing for this course, or this class, this talk, one of those, I decided, you know, to channel a message, and I'm going to read what came through. It was from our buddy Archangel Gabriel. So, here we go. So, greetings, dear ones. Oh, I have to stand up for this. Okay. Greeting, dear ones. How pleased we are to be in your presence today. We honor you for making the commitment to come and anchor the energies of this group. And, of course, when we say group, we mean not only those who are in the room at this time, but also those who are experiencing the transmission at a different time on the internet on this recording. We commend you for your bravery, your good spirits, your wonderful senses of humor, your tenacity, your generous, loving, hopeful hearts. As you continue to move forward during these amazing times, we wish to tell you yet again that you are doing an absolutely magnificent job. You are learning to honor yourselves. You are learning to balance your divinity, your humanity. You are learning to grow and evolve and move and release and integrate. And you are learning to do it with far greater grace and ease than you ever have before. You have learned much over the last few years of linear time. You have shifted profoundly, and you're behaving and navigating your lives in ways that are supporting you, honoring you like never before. But what we are finding with a great number of human beings is that you are letting go of old belief systems that no longer honor you. Many of you are experiencing a residual leftover fear of love, and that is what we wish to address to you today. As you move forward on your ascension path, as you continue to release and integrate higher vibrational energies, you are stripping away everything that is other than love and everything that other than the love that you are. You hear us when we say that you are born from unconditional love. There is no point on your journey when you are not unconditionally loved from Source. That is the truth of your being. You are beings of love. That is your operating system. So all of this growth, all of this shifting that you have been doing is getting back to the truth and the love of who you are. To put it clearer, you are moving away from false conditional love into the unconditional love that you are. Almost all of you have been raised in a conditional love model. You have been taught that love is like a treat that is doled out in front of you if you behave well enough, if you are perfect enough, if you are kind enough, if you are enough. You will earn the reward of love. And because of this, you have love and power all mixed up. Those in power over you will love and approve of you if you are good enough, and if you are not, the tendency is to be rejected. This has caused tremendous problems for you. It has come from your theology. You must be good to gain the favor of God. It has spread into your families to receive love from your parents. You must be good. And now you've placed this model upon yourself. You must be good according to your own impossible standards for you to love yourself. This is a pattern that has been perpetuated and infiltrated in all areas of your life. And yet, here you are, releasing and letting go of so many old beliefs to find yourself, surprisingly, to be a being of unconditional love. What does that mean? How can I be a being of unconditional love when I'm afraid of being judged, when I'm afraid of being rejected, when what has been sold to me as love doesn't feel good at all? How can I feel safe to be unconditional loving when the vast majority of what you have experienced so far in your earthly life expression has been some form of conditional love? This has caused a great deal of confusion, being told something was love and then having to use it as a tool to hurt and control you. It is like somebody offered you ice cream. You heard ice cream was wonderful and so you wanted it, but what you really got was radishes, and it turned out you didn't like radishes at all. Hear us when we say that much of what we have been sold as a being of love has not been love at all. But just like as you figure out what ice cream really is, and it isn't, you can wholeheartedly enjoy it without fear, and so it is with love. So now is your opportunity to change. Now that your belief systems about love are evolving, it is time for you to finally accept yourselves as the being of love that you truly are. It is time to embrace your love as truth. If you are being completely honest, for most people, their first instinct in any situation is to be loving, yet they stop loving themselves because they are afraid it'll be foolish, that it'll backfire or hurt them in some way. You must learn to move beyond what love is not so that you can move into what is. So we would say to you that all of the things that have hurt you, the betrayal, the abandonment, the pain, that has all been sold to you as being love, hasn't been love at all. It has been the absence of love that has hurt you. And you are right in wanting to avoid the absence of love. You are absolutely justified in wanting it to avoid the pain that comes from the absence of love. Do you see? You were right. So if you know what you do not want, which is conditional love or the absence of love, we encourage you to move to what you do want, which is unconditional, accepting, safe, delicious, wonderful love. To heal beyond the absence of love, you must embrace the presence of love. So again, how do we do that? That will be the next question. It must begin within. So you must begin to see yourself as the being of love that you are. You came from source, dear ones. You came from the unconditional love that you are. How could you be anything other than that which you are? It is time for you to embrace your own divinity, your own truth, and stop beating yourself up, abandoning yourself, and putting conditional love models upon yourself. As you learn to love and honor and nurture yourself, you will be healing into an energetic space that can only draw to you more unconditional love. As you stop trying to eradicate and ego yourselves, and rather become your own loving guide, your own loving parent, your own loving superhero, as you can find the wounded inner child and give it love that it is always looking for, you will settle into a much calmer space about love because you will not be navigating from a place of fear or separation. You will be integrating, healing, unifying, and embodying that what you wish to experience more of. As you accept your divinity, you will be moving in alignment with Source that allows love to flow to you through you. It allows you to be so aligned that there will be so much love flooding through you that it can't help but spill out all over the place. You will start feeling the abundance of unconditional love that exists and for you rather than putting a limited mindset upon it. Love is not a limited commodity. There is much more love for everyone. It is your essence. It is the truth of who you are. As you start to become that safe, loving model of unconditional love for yourself, you will be so whole, so healed, and so feeling joyous that you can't help but spill it out into all areas of your life. When your expectation is love, that is what you get. So we will ask you to ask yourself this very simple question. How much more would you love if there was a guarantee you would not get hurt? If it is a lot more than you are loving currently right now in this moment, that is a good indicator to you how much you need to shift your beliefs about love. It lets you know whether you are in alignment with unconditional love or not. And if you're not, choose again. So dear ones, let go of the idea to love wholly and completely is stupid or foolish. How can you expect to have the full experience if you are not willing to stick your toe in the water? You cannot. You must be it. You must let go of the illusions, the old stories that are no longer valid, and embody your truth and be all things you wish to experience. Safely moving into love means that you love yourself enough to have healthy boundaries. It means that love that you give and accept is empowering to all, not just one. So many of you have come in on service contracts that love relationships were built upon saving another, knowing more than another, being the healer, the fixer, the rescuer. While your tender hearts were in the right place, that is not empowering love. Love encourages others to find their own source of love, their divinity, to shine their brightest light. And when you are rescuing, you are perpetuating a victim consciousness. You are in effect saying, I don't trust you to get it right, which is very disempowering. It feeds dependency rather than a supporting environment. It always leaves you out of the equation. Many of you who are on service contracts have a lot of trouble accepting love. You are here to give and serve, so you find it difficult to accept love. Dear ones, we must move into that stream of love in order to be everything that you can be for yourself and for others. Don't you see? It means fairness and balance. It means love must be served and to everybody involved in copious amounts, including yourself. Unconditional love means that you see people for who they are and you believe them. It means that you love them enough to be wherever they are and you allow them to have their own experiences, to find their own light, to move into the knowingness of unconditional love themselves. When you are unconditionally loving to yourself, you let the safe people into your inner circle. You know who that is. You know the people of equal integrity, acceptance, divinity, transparency, and truth. You know the people who are consistently loving you are in a safe place in your inner circle. If people have not yet moved into the ability to be that unconditionally loving person for you, it doesn't mean you should withdraw your love for them. It just simply means that you should honor them for where they are, but you recognize they are not a safe person to have in your innermost circle. When you become discerning and love yourself enough to choose to put only safe people in your inner circle, there is no reason to fear love at all. Many of you will say, well, Gabriel, I thought this person was safe, and so I let them in my inner circle, and they weren't safe for me at all. Well, dear ones, if you are completely honest with yourselves, you will have to admit that there were warning signs from the people that have hurt you. Most people will show you exactly who they are very early on, and on the rare occasion that you are completely surprised by another, accept the truth that they are not safe for you and act accordingly. If someone behaved in a manner that was cruel and unpredictable to a beloved child, would you not immediately step in to protect the child? We urge you to give that same tender care to yourselves. Do you see? You can do all this. You are ready for this. Moving into navigating your life through unconditional love is the next frontier for you. This is the next amazing thing for you to experience. This will continue to drive this grand shift that you are such a pivotal part of. You are the models of what to be, how to connect with your truth. You will be the shining teachers by example. You will be embodying how true unconditional love does not hurt. It uplifts, it encourages, it expands, it grows, it embraces, it supports everyone, and most of all, it heals. It is not something to be afraid of. It is what you have been seeking all along. Love yourselves enough to be the love that you are. Love yourselves enough to be the wholeheartedly expression of who you are and draw to you the love that you deserve. That is what we wish to share with you today, and it has been our great pleasure. So I have a few more minutes. So I wanted to share one more empowering story that I just found amazing. And it came from a non-spiritual source, but the impact was so great. So it's called Navy SEAL Motivation. Every morning in basic SEAL trainings, my instructors, who were at the time were Vietnam veterans, would show up in my barracks room, and the first thing they would inspect was your bed. If you did not get the corners to be square, the covers pulled tight, and the pillows centered under the headboard, the extra blanket folded nearly at the foot of the rack is that Navy talk for a bed, you would hear about it. It was a simple task, mundane at best, but every morning we were required to make our bed to perfection. It seemed a little ridiculous at the time, particularly in the light of the fact that we're aspiring to be warriors, tough battle SEAL, hardened SEALs, But the wisdom of this simple act had been proven many times over. If you make your bed every morning, you have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task, another, and another. By the end of the day, that one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that little things in life matter. If you cannot do the little things right, you will never get the big things right. And if by chance you have a miserable day, you will come home to this bed that is made, that you made, the bed that gives you encouragement that tomorrow will be better. If you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. During SEAL training, the students are broken down into boat crews. Each crew is given 7 students, 3 on each side with a small rubber boat and one to guide the dinghy. Every day, your boat crews forms on the beach and is instructed to get through a surf zone, a paddle, several miles down the coast. In the winter, the surf off of San Diego can get to 8 to 10 feet high and is exceedingly difficult to paddle through the plunging surf unless someone digs in. Every paddle must be synchronized to stroke. Everyone must exert equal effort to the boat or it'll turn against the wave and become tossed back on the beach. For the boat to make its destination, everyone must paddle. You can't change the world alone. You will need some help. You truly get from starting point to your destination. It will take friends, colleagues, and goodwill of strangers and strong people to guide them. If you want to change the world, find someone to help you paddle. Over a few weeks of difficult SEAL training, my class started with 150 men, and I was down to 35. There were now 6 boat crews of 7 men each. I was in the boat with the tall guys, but the best boat crew we had was made up of little guys, the little munchkin crew, we called them. They were only about 5'5". The munchkin boat crew had 1 American Indian, an African American, a Polish American, a Greek American, an Italian American, and the 2 tough kids from the Midwest. They all paddled out, outran, outswam other boat crews. The big men in the other boat crews would always make fun of us, and our fine, tiny little flippers and our munchkins put on their tiny little feet wear prior to every swim. But somehow these little guys from every corner of the nation of the world had always had the last laugh, swimming faster than everyone and reaching the shore long before the rest of us. But SEAL training was a great equalizer. Nothing mattered but your will to succeed, not your color, not your ethnic background, not your education or your social status. If you want to change the world, measure a person by the size of their heart, not their flippers. Several times a week, the instructors will line up in the class to do a uniform inspection. It was exceptionally thorough. Your hat had to be perfectly starched, your uniform had to be immaculate, and your belt buckle had to be shiny. But it seemed that no matter how much effort you put into starching your hat or pressing your uniform or polishing your buckle, it wasn't good enough. The instructors would find something wrong. For failing the uniform inspection, the student had to run, fully clothed, into the surf zone, wet head to toe, roll around on the beach, and every part of your body was covered with sand. The effect was known as sugar cookie. You stayed in that uniform the rest of the day, cold, wet, and sandy. There were many a student who just could not accept the fact that their effort was in vain. So no matter how hard they tried to get the uniform right, it was just unappreciated. Those students didn't make it through training. Those students did not understand the purpose of the drill. You are never going to succeed. You are never going to have the perfect uniform. Sometimes, no matter how well you prepare yourself or how well you perform, you still end up a sugar cookie. So that's the way it is in life sometimes. If you want to change the world, get over being a sugar cookie and keep moving forward. Every day during training, you're challenged with multiple physical events, long runs, swims, and obstacle courses. Every event had standards, times you had to meet. If you failed to meet those standards, your names was posted on the list, and that day you were invited to what's called a circus. A circus was 2 hours of additional calisthenics designed to wear you down, to break your spirit, and to force you to quit. No one wanted a circus. A circus meant that for a day you did not measure up. It meant more fatigue, and it meant that you were going to have to face the days that increasingly become more difficult, which meant more circuses are likely. But at the time, during SEAL training, everyone and everyone made the circuit list. And it was an interesting thing that happened to be constantly on the list. Over time, those students who did the 2 extra hours of calisthenics got stronger and stronger. The pain in the circuses was built inner strength and physical resiliency. Life is filled with circuses. You will fail. You will fail often. It'll be painful. It'll be discouraging. And then sometimes it'll test your very core. But if you want to change the world, don't be afraid of the circuses. At least twice a week, trainees were required to run an obstacle course. The obstacle course contained 25 obstacles, including a 10-foot high wall, a 30-foot cargo net, and a barbed wire to crawl under. But the most challenging obstacle was the slide for life. It had over 3 levels, a 30-foot tower, and at one end, and one level tower, and then the other. In between, it was 200-foot long rope. You had to climb the tiers, and once at the top, you had to grab the rope, swing underneath, and the rope, and then pull yourself hand over fist until you got to the other end. The record for the obstacle course had stood many years by a class training in 1977. The record seemed unbeatable until one day a student decided to go down the slide for life, head first. Instead of swinging his body underneath the rope, inching his way down, he bravely mounted the top of the rope and thrust himself forward. It was a dangerous move, seemingly foolish, fraught with risk. Failure could mean injury and being dropped from the training. Without hesitation, the student slid down the rope super fast instead of several minutes. It only took him half the time, and he ended the course and broke the record. If you want to change the world sometimes you have to head down the obstacle head first. During the land warfare phase of the training, the students had to go off the coast of San Diego. The waters were cold and there was a breeding ground for great white sharks. To pass the SEAL training, there had to be a series of long swims that must be completed. One was the night swim. Before the swimmers could make it, the instructors joyfully briefed the trainees on how all the different species of the sharks that lived in that area. To assure you, however, no student had been eaten by the shark, not recently. But you are also taught if a shark begins to circle your position, stand your ground. Do not swim away. Do not act afraid. And if the shark was hungry for a midnight snack and darts towards you, then you summon up all your strength and punch him in the snout, and he will turn and swim away. There are a lot of sharks in the world. If you hope to complete the swim, you will have to deal with them. So if you want to change the world, don't back down from sharks. As Navy SEALs, one of our jobs is to conduct underwater attacks against every enemy shipping. We practice this technique extensively during basic training. The ship attack mission is where a pair of SEAL divers dropped off the outside of the harbor and use nothing but depth gauge and compass to get to their target. During the entire swim, even well below the surface, the light comes through. It is comforting to know that there is water above you. But as you approach the ship, which is tied to a pier, it begins to fade. The steel structure in the ship blocks the moonlight, and it blocks the surrounding street lamps. It all becomes ambient light. So to be successful in the mission, you have to swim under the ship, find the keel to the center line of the deepest part of the ship. This is your objective. But the keel is also the darkest part of the ship, where you cannot see your hand in front of your face, where the noise from the ship's machinery is so deafening, and where it's easy to get disoriented and fail. Every SEAL knows that under the keel, the darkest part of the mission is the time when you must be the most calm, composed, and use all your tactical skills, your physical power, and your inner strength must be brought to bear. If you want to change the world, you must be your very best in your darkest moment. So in the 9th week of training, this is known as Hell Week, in the 6 days of no sleep, constant physical and mental harassment, and on one day at the mud flats are an area between San Diego and Tijuana where the water runs off and creates a huge swamp, and everybody has to go in and it will engulf you. On Wednesday of Hell Week, you paddle down into the mud flats and spend the next 15 hours trying to survive the freezing cold mud, the howling wind, the incessant pressure from the instructors. And as the sun began to set that Wednesday evening, my training class had, having committed some of the most largest infraction of the rules, we were ordered into the mud. The mud consumed each man there until nothing was visible but our heads. The instructors told us if we could leave the mud, if only five men would quit. If we could just get five men to quit and get out of the oppressive cold. Looking around the mud flat, it was apparent to some of the students were about to give up. It was just over 8 hours until the sun came up, into that bone-chilling cold. The chattering teeth and the shivering moans of the trainees were so loud that it was hard to hear anything, and one voice began in the echo of the night, and it began to sing a song. One voice became two, and two became three, and before everyone in the class was singing, we knew that if one man could rise above the misery, then all others could do so as well. The instructors threatened us with more time in the mud if we kept singing, but we sang our hearts out. And somehow the mud seemed a little warmer, the wind and a little tamer, and the dawn not so far away. If we had learned anything in that time of traveling the world, it's the power of hope, the power of one person. Washington, Lincoln, King, Mandela, and even a young girl from Pakistan were one examples of one person who can change the world by giving hope. So if you want to change the world, start singing with your neck up in mud. Finally, in the ceiling training, there is a bell. It is a brass bell that hangs in the corner of a compound for all students to see. All you have to do to quit is go ring the bell. Ring the bell and you will no longer have to wake up at 5 o'clock. Ring the bell and you will no longer have to have freezing cold swims. Ring the bell and you will no longer have to do runs, the obstacle course, the PT, the circuses, or anything else of the hardships that are in training. Just ring the bell. If you want to change the world, don't ever, ever ring the bell. Thank you.